Welcome to another episode of Hashtag STRAsk. I'm Amy Hall, and Greg Kokel's here with me to help answer your questions.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Greg. Let's get right into this. Here's a question from Brian. I recently heard a really good conversation question to use when debating an atheist. It was, what would it take for you to be convinced that God does exist? But how would you respond if that question was returned to you by the atheist? What would it take to convince you that God does not exist?
Well, I don't think I could answer that. And the reason is, as I've said before, I know too much to be an atheist. It turns out there are the only kind of arguments there are against God go to the coherence of the concept of God. Okay? Because it's like saying, what are the arguments against leprechauns? Well, I don't know what arguments. There's just no evidence for it, for a leprechaun, so there's no reason to believe it. But this is not the case at all about God. There are so many lines of evidence that are so powerful and compelling that I cannot bring myself not to believe in him. And the classic arguments, I think, are all really good. I'm particularly fond of the moral argument. Classical arguments would be the cosmological argument, that is the argument for God's existence based on the existence of the universe, and there are two general categories of that. One that depends on the universe coming into being, and another one that doesn't depend on the universe coming into being at all. So there's two, but they're compelling. The teleological argument based on design. Even Richard Dawkins, the famous atheist, probably the world's most famous atheist, says that the biological world is the complex realm that gives the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. So he even acknowledges the nature of the appearances. Now, he dismisses it, and he thinks he's got a solution in Darwinian mechanisms, but those mechanisms certainly don't go through, which is why many people are abandoning that that view now and trying to find something different. In any event, that still seems to be a compelling argument. A designed universe needs a designer. And finally, the moral argument is one of my favorites because the ubiquitous awareness that something is wrong with the world. Well, there can't be something wrong with the world, classically understood as the problem of evil, unless there is a right way for the world to be. Now, there's a teleology there, that the world was made for a certain thing, that it's not accomplishing it. It's falling short. It's bad. But there can't be a way the world's not supposed to be unless that's the problem of evil, unless there's a way the world is supposed to be, and there can't be a way the world is supposed to be without a sposer. That's the way I characteristically put it. So that's, you know, the moral argument. And the only way out of that that's really defensible is to argue that morality is not objective. It's completely subjective. But we all know better. Everybody knows better than that. This is why we universally raise the question of the problem of evil or the issue. And note, by the way, that the objection there is meant to trade on an apparent contradiction with the way the world actually is and the existence of a good and powerful God. And so that has been compelling to a lot of people, principally because it shows that the notion of God in this world is incoherent, inconsistent with reason. A good and powerful God in the existence of evil. But that has its own problems, what I'm identifying. You can't have a problem of evil unless there is a God. The person who has the problem with the problem of evil is not the Christian, because our story is all about the problem of evil and how it gets fixed. It's the atheist. So all that to say is I honestly can't think of a way to disabuse me rationally of my confidence that God exists anyway than, you know, if I to disabuse me of my belief that you're a colleague of mine and stand to reason. I got too many lines of evidence to show it to be the case. And my common sense intuitions about the existence of Amy Hall overwhelm any theoretical kinds of arguments that people might have against your existence. So I just can't imagine that being overturned, because I don't think it's incoherent to believe in God. I don't think any of those arguments go through. But that's the only, in a certain sense, evidential way that arguments are offered. The only other thing they can do is do undercutting efforts so that the reasons that I have for God, they will find problems with. But I haven't been even marginally impressed with any of the undercutting arguments against the reasons that I think God exists. And there's more than those three classical reasons. You know, you get the argument from desire, for example. You have the argument from religious experience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots of good arguments for God that seem to me to carry weight, and no arguments against him that seem reasonable in the slightest bit. Against his existence, that is.
Greg, I think you've actually answered the question, because in order to answer this question, you don't have to say that you think it's possible. You just have to say how they would do it. And how they would do it is they would convince you that your arguments for God fail. If they could convince you that all those arguments you mentioned and more fail, then you would have – then that would that be compelling to you?
Well, yes, in a certain sense, by definition. If mm-hmm. I believe in God for certain reasons and it turns out all of my arguments failed, then I wouldn't believe in God. But you see, that would require a defeater, not just an undercutter. And these are different types of ways of going after somebody's view. A defeater is the problem of evil. There's a built-in contradiction in the Christian worldview, or so the reasoning goes, and therefore God's existence is nullified. It's falsified by the argument. Now, the argument doesn't go through, and most philosophers understand that, the deductive argument, that is. And that's the only one that matters. The inductive argument just shows possibilities, not necessities. And so that's why the deductive argument, the one most people are familiar with, is so popular, because it is meant to defeat. But if it's just undercutting, if they say, well, the cosmological argument doesn't necessarily prove that there is a God. And my response is, well, even if that's the case, it doesn't necessarily prove that there's a God. It still is the odds-on favorite that there's a God in light of the argument, which is all I need to be rational and reasonable. And the same thing with the moral argument, and the same thing with the teleological argument. People can offer undercutters. The teleological argument, the standard undercutter is the multiverse. Oh, there's millions and billions and infinite number of universes, and when you have all of those universes, then some universe is going to look like it's designed just by pure chance. Well, that presumes that there are such a thing as multiverse. And then the question is, what produces all those multiverses? You know, and an infinite number. By the way, if there's an infinite number of multiverses, then there is an infinite number of universes just like ours. I mean, that's the way the word infinite works. You know, it's crazy. It's not a number, actually. It's a quality or something, but it's not certainly not a number. Mm-hmm. And not a finite number. It's a, you know, how you characterize it. But you see the problem is all of these attempts aren't defeaters. They are simply meant to cast doubt on whether there is certainty with the argument that you're offering. And I don't need certainty. I just need odds on favorite. Mm-hmm. And when J. Warner Wallace does this great job in his book, God's Crime Scene, and he looks at these like it's a circular thing with like these looks like coronavirus, you know, all of these factors like the creation of the universe, or the origin of the universe, the teleological argument, you know, the divine the design parameters and the moral argument and all of these different things, consciousness. And he says, you know, what's interesting is there's all kinds of answers why this particular thing does not support God. There's an alternate way of looking at it. But all of the alternate ways that they offer for these different categories, they don't fit with each other. The answer that God is responsible for these things is fully consistent with all the evidence, and it ties everything together into a unified whole as an explanation. It covers all the bases, which is great. And I also mentioned to Jim, he said, and plus we have a signed confession that is the Bible, so to speak. But because he's using his detective motif to describe this. He's looking for the culprit that satisfies all the evidence, and that's going to be God. So anyway.
So just to sum up what you're saying, if somebody were to ask him, what would it take you to convince, or what would it take to convince you that God does not exist, then a good answer would be, well, if you defeat my arguments, then I would have no good reason, would I? So let's talk about the arguments, and you can move them right onto the arguments.
You'd have to offer a bona fide defeater, not an undercutter. Like it makes it unlikely in some sense, or not necessarily so. That's not going to do. You'd have to have a defeater, or maybe an undercutter that is so powerful that it would mean that it is not the odds-on favorite to believe in God in this circumstance. What I've noticed that a lot of atheists do is they trade on theistic notions, that is, notions that are at home only in a theistic worldview and not at home in his materialistic worldview, to try to defeat the theistic worldview. And some who've read Tactics will know that that's the infanticide, suicide. You know, the child that they're using, the parent that needs to be in place for this other concept defeats the concept itself. So,
and I can imagine that if they undercut enough of the arguments, at some point it does become less likely
implausible
to believe in God.
Less likely, but it would have to be beyond less likely than certain. It would have to be implausible.
Mm-hmm.
To be undermining that argument, pardon me, effectively enough to abandon it.
So move them to the actual arguments, and that's where your best option is. Mm-hmm. Talk about the arguments.
And what you're going to get is, it ain't necessary. Your explanation, Christian, ain't necessarily so. But I'm not arguing it's necessarily so. I'm saying it's the best argument. It's the most likely scenario given the evidence we have.
Just because they can think of another possibility doesn't mean that possibility is more probable than what you're offering.
That's right. Well put.
All right. Let's take a question from Bird. How do you respond to someone who claims people should live their lives however they want as long as they don't hurt anybody? Are there logical or moral issues with this view?
Yeah. It's got a name. It's called the minimalist ethic. And they use the phrase in ethics to describe that because it appears to be the minimal thing that we can all agree on. Okay. And is that, okay, we all agree that we shouldn't be hurting each other, right? Okay. Now, here are the difficulties. One of them, and I've actually written a piece on this many, many years ago that's probably online, and it's called Minimalist Ethic Too Minimal. So I'm not sure if it survived the transition to the new website or not, because we had to pare a lot of stuff down. But the problem is, the minimalist ethic is meant, it's intended to capture the ethical project adequately to maintain peace among people who have differences of opinions about other aspects of it. Well, we can all agree to this kind of thing. The difficulty, though, is it doesn't capture the moral project. It only captures one sliver of the moral project. Okay, because in morality, you have even in law, you have responsibility for malfeasance. That means you did the wrong thing. You have a misfeasance. That means I think you do the right thing in the wrong way. Or you have nonfeasance. In other words, you didn't do something you were supposed to do, but you were by law and in the parallel here morally obliged to do. So the morality covers a lot more than just not acting. Excuse me. And so what happens? Do we have any moral obligation to act? Well, it seems that we do. There are times when if we don't act, we are morally responsible. But one could always say, well, I know that that child was standing in the middle of the street and I saw cars coming and I didn't do anything to stop anybody because I just wanted to see the impact. But I wasn't hurting anybody. And in fact, that scenario would satisfy the minimalist ethic. The bystander wasn't hurting anybody. It was the car that hurt the kid. But the fact is, the bystander could have prevented the death of the child had the bystander acted. So this is a responsibility of nonfeasance. They didn't do what they ought to have done. But notice that this is not captured in the so-called minimalist ethic. Okay, but there's another problem too, is that it just seems that there's lots of things that are wrong, that don't fall under lots of other things that are wrong that don't fall under that category. For example, what about having sex with a corpse? I mean, it's a pretty gross thought here, but I'm just tossing it out because most people think that's wrong. But who's getting hurt there? Or what about peeping toms? Is a violation of somebody's privacy okay if they don't know that you're eavesdropping on them visually while they're in some intimate moment? What about the dentist who puts their patient under sedation and then molests the patient while the patient is sedated? That dentist is not hurting anybody. So there's another couple of counterexamples to that. Plus, it kind of presumes that we know the consequences of our actions, and this is a huge blind spot. Well, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm just, you know, me and my girlfriend, we're sleeping together. We're not hurting anybody until she gets pregnant and has an abortion, or until she gets pregnant and decides to keep the child and then has to live with her parents or they take care of them. You know, just for just a quick illustration, this kind of stuff happens all the time. People just wanting to do their own thing. And so they deny moral conventions, which moral conventions have proven themselves over time to be able to be prescient about the consequences of people's actions. They know what kinds of behaviors produce harm in other people's life down the line. That's why we say no to these things right now, even if the young person doesn't see it. So there's all kinds of things that are wrong with this scenario. And if somebody brings it up, I don't know, the best way to deal with it might be just to ask, so you're okay with that dentist who molested their patient while the patient was sedated? No, I'm not. Why would I say, well, they're not hurting them. They didn't even know about it. So you offer the counterexample. This is an example of taking the roof off as a tactic. You accept their point of view and you follow it to its natural conclusion, see where it leads. If it leads to someplace bizarre, there's probably something wrong with where you started.
Yeah, you touched on this, Greg, but I think one of the biggest problems with this is, how do you know you're not hurting anybody? How do you know you're not hurting yourself? If there's a way that we're supposed to live, if there's a way that we were created to live, mm-hmm. in a way that honors God and leads to human flourishing, and you're not following that, you're hurting yourself. You're not just... And who knows how you're hurting other people, Greg? You mentioned one option. Maybe you get pregnant. Well, what if you don't get pregnant? Well, you're still hurting each other because you're not living the way you were designed to live, and therefore there will be consequences that maybe you don't realize or you don't see. So what I think this is ignoring, ultimately, and I don't know that any non-Christian would agree that this is important to them. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you're ignoring the fact that you have an obligation to God as your creator.
Right.
So you can't just live however you want, as he said, because we have an obligation to live in the way God created us to live according to what he has told us we mm-hmm. are supposed to do. And we have an obligation to that. This obviously comes from a completely different worldview where we just create whatever it is we want to create. We create whatever lies we want to create because there's no aspect of reality that we have to conform ourselves to. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking about this in the last couple episodes.
Except for that minimalist ethic. But my suspicion is that people don't offer that minimalist ethic genuinely. Like, this is a genuine justification for their behaviors. Because if you show them that their behaviors do hurt somebody else, they're not interested in seeing that. Or that it may likely bring harm to others or to themselves, as you're pointing out. They're not interested in that. You give counterexamples and then they brush them off. Because what they're interested in, and this is the larger point you're getting at, is doing what they want to do. And mm-hmm. the culture, by and large, is supportive of that. It's called expressive individualism.
Right. And the culture is saying that that is how you become truly human, is that you do whatever it is you want to do. And if you're not doing whatever it is you want to do, you're not being authentic.
There it
and
is.
You're being less
the
than
A-word.
Human.
Right. Right.
So if somebody brings this up to you, these are a lot of ideas you can offer to them. I think right now We are such foreign creatures to the culture, Greg. Our idea of reality, our idea of reality as being something we have to conform ourselves to, that is a very foreign idea. And just by us expressing that to others and explaining that to others, I think that's valuable. I don't know that they will believe you, but let's tell them the truth and see what mm-hmm. God does with that. So reality is a good place to start here.
Yeah, you know, and all we have to do, to be honest, I mean, to not be honest, I mean, to be, to be, in a sense, even risking oversimplifying it, is we just need to state what's obviously true. So much of what stands for, like social ethics nowadays, the spirit of the age, you know, is just contrary to common sense. If you just look and see, that's dumb. Well, it probably is. It's contrary to common sense, and so you can point to reality and what is obvious about reality to make your point. You don't have to have philosophy or theology or apologetics all at your beck and call. The more you have of that, I think the better you'll be, and the more clearly you'll see things that are silly and foolish. But most ordinary folk can see the silliness, right? So do men menstruate? No. You don't menstruate, right? You're not a woman. You know, duh. Men don't menstruate. So men don't have babies, and we're talking about the gender issue right now, but that's common sense. You know, you don't need to wait for the kid to grow up to tell you what gender he is or she is or it is, I guess. You can see. That's why doctors say it's a boy, it's a girl. It's obvious. Everybody knows that. And that's what we can trade on, truth, obvious truth.
Mm-hmm. And the idea, again, it seems obvious to us, but what I am discovering is that so many people have been trained just by soaking in the culture to thinking these other ideas about reality that we create ourselves, that they've accepted them, that it doesn't seem so obvious to them anymore. So that's why we need to call attention to it mm-hmm. and speak the truth to them and see what God does with it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say about that, Greg. We're out of time. Well, thank you, everyone. We appreciate hearing from you. Keep sending those questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.